This is Australia by Night with Stephen Senatiempo right across Australia on the Triple M Network. If you'd like to have your say tonight, 1327 10 is the number. Now, I've heard of camel milk, and I thought that was a bit strange when I first heard it, that there was a farm in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales breeding camels simply to be milked. Well, there's probably one animal that's stranger than a camel, and that'd be the Aussie platypus. Well, platypus milk apparently could save lives. Now, to talk to us about this, we're joined by CSIRO scientist Janet Newman. Janet, platypus milk. Did you ever believe in your wildest dreams you'd be talking to somebody on the radio about that?
No, my dreams aren't that wild.
Now, there's two lots of research here. Originally, some research at Deakin University and then some research that you guys did at the CSIRO. But take us back to the beginning. How did this all come about?
So it came about because our colleagues at Deakin University are lactation experts. They know about milk. And they were interested in looking at a comparative analysis of platypus milk versus other milks. And they noticed when they did that, that there was a component in platypus milk that wasn't actually in any of these other milks at all, sort of other mammalian milk, camel milk, for example. And so they decided to say, let's have a look at this component and see what it does. And it turns out that it's got antibacterial activity. And they were been aware of that since, 2010. But then they get in contact with us at CSIRO and said, hey, can you make us this bit so we don't have to keep going back to a platypus? And that's where we came in.
Because I imagine milking platypuses is probably not the easiest thing in the world to do.
I imagine not only is it hard, I mean, just finding a platypus is hard.
Well, that's
but
right.
But also there's a lot of ethics involved, ethics permissions, because they're protected animals.
So how would this research have, I mean, what would have led them to the platypus as an animal? Was there something about monotremes that sort of said, well, hang on, we need to investigate this because there's a chance that the milk from these animals is going to be different to every other milk we've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. So pretty much every other mammal has breasts, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
They have, and then they have a nipple. And the idea of a breast and a nipple is to keep milk sterile before it's actually fed to the young. Whereas platypuses and echidnas don't have nipples. What they have is a milk pad, and then the milk, which is still very nutrient-rich, is expressed onto the milk pad, and the young lap it up.
Okay.
And that means that the milk is then exposed to the environment and needs to be protected from spoilage before the young get to it. And
right.
That's where this protein comes in.
So you've now manufactured this protein in a lab. What can it do, and what are the potential health benefits from this?
So when we made it, it was then put through a battery of tests, and it looks like it is quite efficient at killing off some of the nastier bacteria, such as the bacteria which causes golden staph infections. And that is interesting because many of the Staphylococcus aureus, that's the golden staph bacteria, are actually resistant to quite a lot of our normal antibiotics.
So, Janet, how would you use platypus milk? As we've discussed, I mean, there are ethical and practical issues with milking the actual animal. Is it now that you've identified this particular protein or this substance within the milk, you'll just manufacture that and that will then go on to be a treatment for various bacteria and the like?
Yeah, I'd say a possible treatment.
Right.
Just, you know, science, we hedge our bets. But absolutely right. We would only be interested in that component. And essentially, once we've got past the discovery stage, and thanks to the platypus for that, then we keep them out of the picture.
So some of the headlines around about platypus cappuccinos that we've seen in the media in the last couple of days are not likely to happen.
That's all foam.
Right. Okay, so where do you go from here? What's the next stage in the research?
So the next stage in the research is to work out exactly how this protein works. So before anything becomes a therapy, it has to be well understood to make sure that you don't have side effects or that it does exactly what you expect it to do. And what we did at CSIRO is determined what the protein looks like at the genomic level. And so now we have a really good backbone or scaffold to start understanding how the protein actually works. If I can waste your time a little bit with an analogy, it's once you know the shape of something, you often have a good idea of how it works. And that works not only for proteins, which are very, very small indeed, but also for things like, I don't know, footballers. If you were to see an AFL guy and a rugby guy, and I told you that there were two footballers, you'd be able to pick which code they belong to just by their look.
And you've nicknamed this protein the Shirley Temple protein. Why?
Well, when we looked at the atomic structure, it turns out that it has all of these alpha helices or curls, and so many curls that look just like Shirley Temple.
Okay, there you go. Look, I think this is absolutely fascinating. What's the sort of timeline for, you know, a potential treatment to come out of this research?
We would be looking, you know, years, because once again, it has to go through a battery of tests to make sure that we understand how it works and that it's safe.
Well, isn't it amazing that this research has come off the back of a fairly hermit-like, cranky little animal?
Yeah, you know, you never know what you're going to find until you look.
That's exactly right. Janet Newman, good to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
That's Janet Newman from the CSIRO. Well, there you go, platypus milk. What do you think of that? 13:27:10.